This is Cougar Post Game Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network. Cougar Post Game Live is brought to you by Hyundai. There's joy in every journey. Cougar Post Game Live is also brought to you by Big O Tires. Stop by your locally owned and operated Big O Tires, the team you trust. Here's the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell.
Well, you know what scoregami is? It's when you get a score that hasn't happened before. And my stats intern, Tyler Mattingly, says 18-15 BYU is a BYU scoregami. It's a final tonight here in Dallas. BYU wins it by three. Let's head down to field level. Linebacker Harrison Taggart joining Greg and Hans on the headset. Harrison, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Wow. I'll tell you, man, that was, I mean, it's always a team win, right? I mean, everyone contributes, but that defense tonight...
Wow.
Outstanding. I mean, this game is won primarily on the defensive side of the ball. You guys were nails. Talk about your brethren on the defense and how you guys got this done tonight.
You know, we're a tight-knit group on defense, and we're playing like brothers, you know what I mean? We're playing for each other, and we're really just having fun with it. And at this game put a statement on. There's definitely things we still need to fix, but we're happy.
All right, Harrison, let's talk about this, man. Because coming into this game, one of my keys was R.J. Maryland and shutting down R.J. Maryland. And there I see my boy, number 11, in perfect defense, perfect position, knocking down a pass to R.J. Maryland at the end of this game. How much responsibility did you carry for R.J., and how much did you guys game plan to take him out of it?
You know, we knew R.J., we knew he was a heck of a player. We really just played to our fundamentals and did what the coaches taught us at the end of the day.
Harrison, as mentioned, it never takes just one side of the football, and this offense went out and scored two touchdowns, a key two-point conversion. Having each other's back is the name of the game, isn't it?
Oh, totally the name of the game. I mean, we have points on the board, and it results in a win.
So I want you to talk about what you saw from your guys up front, because, Harrison, I thought this was one of the best performances I've seen from a BYU defensive line since I've been up here in the booth.
Man, you're telling me. It was really nice. Having those big boys up front. I mean, number 94 and Big John Nelson's walking up to me now, right now. It's nice having dogs like that you can play behind and you can just scrape over the top. Shout out John Nelson doing the dance on the field.
That is an awesome dance. Tell him he's got beautiful moves.
Hey, John, the radio says he had beautiful moves.
He's all right, man. Hey, Harrison, and you also had Jay Hill on the flight, in the booth, on the headset. How big was that for you guys and Coach Hill tonight?
You know, it's different. Coach Hill's usually on the field with us. But, you know, he is a mastermind at football. So using him in the booth and him being able to see the whole field is amazing.
Okay, we hear the chants of BYU in the background. How nice to come on the road into Dallas and have that much support with you.
Dude, it's amazing. Basically, the whole south end zone's blue. It's awesome.
Harrison, there was some fantastic coverage in the backfield as well, and a beautiful interception just off the sideline. Talk about what you had going on behind you and how much you guys were focused on these two quarterbacks.
You know, we didn't know who was going to play. We knew that they had two amazing quarterbacks, and they played really good. Like I said earlier, we're a band of brothers, and trusting everybody in front of us and everybody behind us, that's a huge part of our defense.
Harrison, we really appreciate you popping on the headset. Thanks for the time. Congrats on getting to 2-0.
Thanks for having me.
Way to go, Harrison.
And as linebacker Harrison Taggart, more of Cougar Post Game Live is coming your way. It's Hyundai Cougar Post Game Live from Dallas on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
You're listening to Cougar Post Game Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network. Now, back to Greg Wrubell.
The last time BYU played SMU in the regular season, my partner Hans Olsen was on the field and on the team for BYU. The Cougs won it by 3, 19-16. Tonight, BYU wins it by 3, 18-15 over SMU. And BYU defensive back Mark Collins joins us on Hyundai Cougar Post Game Live, when it is brought to you by Hyundai. And Mark Collins, before we get to you, I'll tell our listeners that there's joy in every journey. See your Utah Hyundai dealers, proud partner of BYU Athletics. All right, Mark. Your first BYU interception tonight, part of this exciting and thrilling defensive battle and a win. Congrats to you and the guys. Well done.
Thank you.
Maybe you could start by describing a tremendous play that you make with the toes getting down and you're back to the sideline and SMU driving inside your 10-yard line. A huge pick. How did you see it?
Honestly, that's a play that we kind of been waiting on. Like, all week we'll practice that play. And I was not getting it right in practice. So, unfortunately enough, I saw it, and it just clicked for me in-game, which is the most important, and I made the play.
Well, Mark, I actually want to stay on that interception because I saw you with man responsibilities on the outside. Yep. Your guy trails to the inside. I know you had safety help inside. But how much of a risk are you taking at that moment to break off that route and step in front of that interception?
So, yeah, like I said, in practice, you know, it was something we practice. If he runs that post and I carry it to my safety and try to see that wheel coming. So it was kind of like man, but I just had to go make a play on it. And that's what we practiced this week. So we got it done.
Well, Mark, the defense or the offense had to go out and do its part, certainly to provide the winning points. But it just felt that time after time, this defense, when it needed to stand up and make a play, did that. You kept SMU to 261 yards and out of the end zone on this night. And you know some of the numbers they've been putting up, especially here at home.
Yeah, it was. We just came in with a different mentality. You know, we watched film on them a lot, and we saw how they play. You know, they can get physical, they can get scrappy. So we just wanted to match that and, you know, play our game as well. And I think we did a great job tonight of doing that on the back end. We did a good job with our backers flowing well. A lot of mistakes, but we got to win, so it's easier to, you know, fix those, and it's a lot more fun to fix those when we get a win.
Well, Mark, we were sitting up here calling this game, and in the first quarter, I saw their receivers were catching some good blocks getting to the outside. In the second half, holy cow, you were fighting off the blocks, you were getting to the outside, and you were getting the pressure. Did you guys have a little reckoning in the locker room at halftime?
For me, we watched a lot of film on these guys, and they were not blockers. I can honestly say that. So I wasn't coming out expecting them to be, you know, physical in a blocking game, which they were. So at halftime, we made that adjustment, you know, just figured it out from there.
Mark, congratulations on getting to 2-0. Go get them in Wyoming next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me.
That's Mark Collins' first career interception as a Cougar, sixth as a collegiate football player, part of BYU's win over the SMU Mustangs tonight. Let's pop the headset on Jake Retzlaff before our break. BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff joining Greg and Hans upstairs. BYU's a winner, 18-15. Jake on the night, 15 for 28 for 202 and a score pass efficiency rating of 111.7. Jake joins us now. Hey, Jake, they all count the same, and there are things you're going to want to clean up, I know, but how good does it feel to be 2-0 tonight?
Oh, it feels good, Greg. I mean, it's an incredible feeling. You know, we were big underdogs coming into this game, to come into their stadium and win it as we expected to do. It just feels good.
But, Jake, there was some incredible moments here by this defense and some crazy moments by this offense. And I just want to kind of walk through a couple of things. I mean, when you needed scores, you were able to get some possession and movement. Take me into the momentum of what you guys were doing offensively.
You know, with this offense, we can get explosive so fast. We got so many playmakers on the edge. I know you're talking about big plays like Darius' catch and like Miles' run up the sideline. Like, we can just put it together and make big plays. We got a lot of playmakers on this team and a lot of guys who complement each other too well. And so we knew it was going to be a tough one. Offensively, we'd like it to be, you know, higher scoring as a tough one, but we got the job done today.
So the Miles Davis run comes on a 4th-and-1, and he gains 37, and it's a quick developing option to your left. You take a pop, and you get rid of it just in time.
Yeah, that one is one we looked at on tape all week, and we prepared for that one all week. We knew that 4th-and-1, we'd like that call a lot, and we also knew it would happen fast, so ball handling was important there. With a little jet action to get the defense moving one way and Miles coming around the other way to get on the edge. And so it's just a great game plan, great call by Coach A-Rod at a perfect moment, and Miles Davis up the sideline is a pretty, pretty sight.
Well, in that moment, Jake, in that pitch where you take a really nasty hit, they had stuffed 7 in the box. They'd really moved it inside. Is that a recognition snap and pitch? Is that a pitch that you know is coming before you're even running with it?
Yeah, we know they got to get an extra guy on that edge, and we're reading them there. And so, like you said, as a quick developing play on 4th-and-1, they're sending the house. We got to know that the read's going to happen fast. We call it when he attaches the pitch key. When the pitch key is attacking the mesh, running after the mesh, we got to be able to make a decision quickly, get the ball out of our hands, and hope to take less of a hit than we did. But, you know, just get right back up and run the next play.
All right, Jake, you go to 2-0, and you stay on the road. Your thoughts about heading to Laramie next week?
It is a horrible place, and I'm looking forward to getting a good win there and getting out.
Thank you, Jake.
Yep.
All right, Jake Retzlaff, we'll take a break. This is Hyundai Cougar Post Game Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
Post Game Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
BYU wins a game by an 18-15 score for the first time in BYU football history. Stats intern Tyler Mattingly, who told us that, tells us that for the first time in the Kalani Sitake era, BYU played a power conference opponent who did not score a touchdown. first time that a Power Conference team has played BYU without scoring a touchdown since the 2012 season opener against Mike Leach and Washington State. 30-6, the BYU win. That was 12 years ago. Kept SMU out of the end zone. Didn't just keep SMU out of the end zone. Kept the team averaging 54 points a game over a nine-game home win streak out of the end zone, Hans.
It's impressive, and, you know, you're not even looking at that many points from SMU if you're not hitting 50-plus yard field goals.
Twice.
Everything that was coming off that kicker's foot was finding its way through the uprights, and that's just an impressive night by him. Outside of that, the defensive pressures, I want to mention this because we just saw a major jump in defensive line production. You've heard me harping on this. They brought in some extra help. Chad Kawahaha has helped Sione Pua. Gary Anderson has come in, and he's helped with some of the defensive line efforts. Kelly Popinga has continued to help on the outside pressures. And we have seen everything jump. We've seen all kinds of productions jump. Eight TFLs tonight. Three sacks tonight. What does that bring the total to in a two-sack or in the two games?
It's five.
That's five total sacks.
Yeah.
So you're nearly halfway of the full production that you got last year out of this defensive line in sacks. And you can go to pressures and big plays and the TFLs, but Blake Mangelson, two and a half TFLs, a sack, pressures all night, unstoppable. They were doing so many good things with him. They were putting him inside. They were going with the three downs and rushing him and Tyler Batty off the edge. You know, and these guys are asked to do a lot, too. You know, they're asked to drop into some coverages. And like Tyler Batty, there were multiple times he dropped into coverage. And these guys have big tasks. Then they've got to hold up their end of the bargain on contain, and they've got to figure out their one-on-one pass rushes and their pressures. And so a lot falls on them. So I like the help that they've brought in, and I'm just so happy to see the production from this defensive front.
So this is a low-scoring win for BYU, right? Final score 18-15. When's the last time BYU scored fewer than 20 points and still won a football game? Because it doesn't happen very frequently. I think you got to go way back. I'm going back, and I've gone back 10 years at this point.
To what?
And having a game that BYU wins while scoring fewer than 20 points.
You've gone back how many years?
Well, I've gone about 10 right now. Back in 2017, BYU won a game over Portland State 20-6. They won a game in 2016, 20-3. But these lower scoring wins, oh, here it is, 2016. So it goes back 8 years. Well, how about this? Here's a funny note. It was Kalani's first game. How quickly I forget. Season opener 2016, Kalani's first game, he won 18-16 over Arizona. That's the last time that his team scored fewer than 20 and won a game. It was his first game.
Well, it's just great to see his defense back. And we talked about this as BYU's defense was coming out on the field on that final possession. I said, if I could build an ending for this team, it would be this defense and a defensive stand. It's almost like...
Got down to a 4th-and-10.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you get to the end of the game back in the 90s with Michael Jordan, and you'd separate, run some isolation, and say, all right, it's Michael Jordan's game.
Ball in his hands.
Well, it was the defense's game, and they finished. They answered the call, and it couldn't have been a more beautiful finish to a night that really went into their hands. And I know we're going to get to Star and Steelman, but I'm just telling you right now, we're not going to look any further than this defense.
And the note you made about sacks a minute ago, the three sacks, the most in a game since the four against Arkansas last season, which not coincidentally was the last time BYU won an away game.
Yeah.
They lost five straight away games since that win at Arkansas.
And trailing in the first
half? They were trailing at halftime.
Yeah, because I think you'd mentioned that note, too.
Yeah, they haven't won a lot of games when
was the last
trailing at halftime. And that was the last one, was the Arkansas game. Yeah,
exactly right. There's a couple of different notes on this. And oh, hey, that's weird. That defense is the coincidence.
Yeah.
The defense is the answering call. We've gotten so used to seeing the defense at times last year give up momentum and give up plays that you didn't realize that you might have a defense that can answer. But this defense was disciplined. And Gennaro Guilford, hey, great job with those corners, guys out on the edge. You know, these are quarterbacks that can really get the ball out. And those pressures led to taking Preston Stone off the field. We do need to make a note of that.
I'm not sure Stone and his team gained a first down when he was on the field tonight. It was mostly all Kevin Jennings.
And they had to go to Kevin Jennings because there was not a pocket. So they've got to figure out their offensive line issues.
Let's go to the Metal Mart Steel Man of the Game, brought to you by Palmer's Metal Mart, your local metal supplier for over 26 years. By the way, both our postgame honorees tonight, the Metal Mart Steel Man of the Game and the Waystar Star of the Game, both defensive players. Metal Mart Steel Man of the Game, who do you like?
I like Blake Mangelson. I like the Mangler. I like what he did. He's universal. He was playing inside. He was playing outside. He was running contains. He was running into screens. He was running all over the place. Had multiple pressures and some big plays in the backfield, Greg.
And here's what he did tonight. 7 tackles, which is second on the team. 2 solo stops. A sack. 2.5 TFLs in a hurry.
Ooh, that's
a bad night for the Mangler. He is your Metal Mart Steel Man of the Game, Blake Mangelson. Now to the Waystar Star of the Game, presented by Waystar, simplifying healthcare payments. Learn more at waystar.com. We heard from linebacker Harrison Taggart. It's one of his fellow backers that gets your nod as the star of the game.
Yeah, Jack Kelly. Jack Kelly did such an amazing job. Oh, man, okay, let's do this. And let me know if somebody steps up for an interview here, but let's talk about this because my number one key to the game was keeping quarterbacks in check, not letting them get on the outsides, not letting them use their feet, not letting them get first downs with their feet. And the bulk of that fell on Jack Kelly. Every time Jennings went to go to the outside to find some yardage, Jack Kelly was there, fired out of a cannon, and forcing him back inside or bringing him down on the tackle or forcing him out of bounds. Jack Kelly was there. So that's first and foremost. It's not that he led the team in tackles. He didn't even lead them in sacks. But he was everywhere he needed to be to contain those quarterbacks. Now for his numbers, he was fantastic too. I know he was in the backfield multiple times tonight.
Jack Kelly ends up going 5 tackles, 2 solos, a sack, 1.5 tackles for loss, and 3 hurries.
3 hurries. There you go. 3 hurries.
BYU 7 hurries on the night.
3 hurries from Jack Kelly. He was absolutely fantastic. And it's like, you know, you come into the season, and remember, we were circling Jack Kelly. Like, can he really be another Weber State transfer that carries some defensive responsibility and can lift the heavy weights that you're asking him to lift? And here he is in an ACC game on the road against a very good rushing quarterback, forcing him back inside, forcing pressures, getting sacks, making big plays, grabbing a couple of other big tackles. He deserves the star of the game. He was everywhere he needed to be.
And BYU wins yet another short week game on the road after a Saturday game. They keep doing it.
Yeah. And
pretty impressive.
And I keep going back to the quarterback situation and what we saw from Southern Illinois, 120 yards from Williams, and felt like every gap was open. And they shut the gaps. They closed them. And, you know, there were a couple things. I don't remember seeing Ephraim Asiata on the field. Ephraim Asiata got a lot of playing time against Southern Illinois. What they did is they tried to play their bigger ends. They tried to really press into bull rushes and a lot more power rush instead of speed rush. And the power rushes were getting there. That's what's awesome. You know, you're getting power rushes from Logan Latouille and Tyler Batty and Blake Mangelson over P.J. Williams, who goes 6'5", 320 pounds, and Nate Anderson, who goes 6'5", 300 pounds. And they're collapsing the pocket just off power rushes. And there were multiple times in those final possessions where they went 3-man rush. Now, they did bring a delayed rush off a 4th guy, but they had 3 downs. They went 3-man rush, and they were still able to at least push the pocket to make Jennings scramble out. So you just circle those defensive linemen and everything they did tonight. They were just classy, in what they did.
And how happy were you to make 2 defensive players our 2 postgame honorees tonight?
Well, it does my heart so much good. And I'm sure it does Jay Hill's heart so much good.
In so many ways.
You know, I bumped into him, as I mentioned, at halftime here in the hallway. And I couldn't stop hugging him. Yeah, I've known Jay for so many years, and I just love him like a brother. And, you know, you just sit there and hug him. And And he was like, you got to let me go. I got to go call a second half. And I'm like, no, I don't want to let you go. I just am so happy that he can be here. I'm so happy he could be a part of this game plan, put this scheme together, and that his guys showed up for him. And I can't help but believe that these guys are playing inspired football for their coach. You know, they weren't sure if they were going to get him back in a season. And here he is in the booth with his wife. And by the way, Sarah, his amazing wife, that's still tougher than him. She went through more than he went through. She was in the hallway, too, and I got to talk to her, and she said, I got him. I'm watching him. He's fine. Those two together they are the power couple. She's from Nampa. Jay, of course, the long stay at Weber and has just built a name and reputation for toughness. And having those guys in the booth was great.
We'll take a break. Greg and Hans upstairs. Mitch on the field. More from the BYU locker room coming up. It is Hyundai Cougar Post Game Live. BYU 18, SMU 15, our final on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
Alongside Hans Olsen, here's the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell, with more Cougar postgame live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
18-15, BYU defeats SMU, ending the Mustangs' nine-game home win streak. The winning points coming off the foot of Will Farron. Farron kicks a 26-yard field goal to make the score. Final margin, 18-15. First time BYU's ever won a game by an 18-15 score. Here's a funny thing. The Cougs now 5-0 against SMU all-time, and four of the five wins by a field goal or less. 46-45 in the Miracle Bowl, 19-16 in the Hans Olsen high ankle sprain game, 24-23 in the New Mexico Bowl of 2022, because everyone calls it that, the Hans Olsen high ankle sprain game.
Yeah, but it's just hard.
And then 18-15 tonight.
It's hard coming off the majesty of the Miracle Bowl.
It's right there with it. It gets lumped in.
Hans Olsen.
I said down to Mitch Jorgens. He's in the end zone. I see him near the S in SMU. You know, most of the fans have been asked to leave the seating area, but the BYU fans, Mitch, stuck around to high-five and sing a fight song and celebrate with these guys. Another night on the road, this time in the Metroplex, where Cougar Nation shows out.
It was, I mean, talk about an incredible atmosphere. I don't want to say that the BYU fans in Texas are bigger and better than anywhere else, but I guess being from Texas, I may just have to say that. I mean, it was so cool. I mean, I don't think it was a 50-50 split on SMU to BYU fans, but it was pretty darn close to see the sea of royal blue that was here in the stadium. And then after the game, everybody's coming down to the field to get, to try and get some one-on-one time with some of these players. And I mean, just credit to BYU Nation for how they showed up, how they always show up on the road and in big games like these. I mean, the defensive stands that they had, I mean, they were fueled by this crowd. They were loud. They were rowdy. They were starting their BYU chants. Just an incredible atmosphere. And the credit goes to BYU Nation for traveling so well, especially those here in, around the Texas area. I was talking to a few. Some traveled from Oklahoma. Some traveled from nearby states, Louisiana, and they all come to support. And, I mean, it's just incredible.
Hey, what was the sideline like, Mitch, as this BYU defense was holding up their end of the bargain? What was their sideline like?
It was awesome. I mean, this is one of those things that when there's momentum, there was a little bit of a lull there. Like, I think people wondering, like, hey, what happened? We started off strong. You see guys getting up and rowdy and rooting on their teammates. There in the middle, it got a little bit dicey. Like, hey, who's going to step up? Who's going to be that person that continues to fuel this team? And in the fourth quarter, there was a dramatic change. And it all started with that defense. They'd come off the field and they were going to the offense, trying to hype them up. The offense was returning the favor every time the defense came back out on the field. There was so much support for all of the players. And it was just it was a positive vibe. And it felt like this team knew that they were going to win this game.
Couple of things that are concerning: two interceptions thrown by Jake Retzlaff and putting the ball on the ground one time and a fumble in the first quarter. Just talk about what you saw from Jake Retzlaff in that early parts of that game.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I talked about in pregame was just how decisive he was in his decision making in the previous game. I didn't see too much of that. It seemed that he was a little bit rattled, whether the defense was showing him things that he wasn't familiar with or wasn't anticipating. He looked a little flustered there throughout the game, just couldn't. Some of the throws that he was making too, like easy throws, bubble screens, quick out routes, he was missing pretty significantly. And I won't chalk that up to that being Jake, and that's the Jake that we're going to expect to see, because when it mattered, he did put together a drive.
He did.
And that's what you need in a quarterback, because a good quarterback, they're not going to be great every single time they step on the field. They're going to need the support of the cast around them to pick them up in games like these. And shout out to the defense. Shout out to the big play, 4th-and-1, Caleb Etienne sealing off the edge. Miles Davis executing that play perfectly. I mean, that's what you need in big moments like that. And the leader that Jake is, to see him walk around, he did not have his best game. Turned the ball over 3 times. But after the game, he was one of the ones that was smiling, thanking the defense, giving so much credit where credit was due. And that's what you need in a leader and a quarterback.
Great job, Mitch. Mitch, let's hang with you, actually. I think we're going to have the headset put on. Who do we have down there, Mitch?
Isaiah Glasker.
Isaiah Glasker putting on the headset from the end zone. BYU defeats SMU by a final score of 18-15 tonight. Isaiah Glasker, 6 tackles, 2 solo stops, a sack for his TFL, a pass breakup. Isaiah joining us on the headset. Isaiah Glasker, congratulations to you and the Cougs. Great win tonight.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, first up, we were nervous for a moment because you stayed down for a bit. How you feeling?
Pretty good. I got a little dinged up. I just go to the sideline for like one play or two, so it wasn't too bad.
Isaiah, let's talk about this. We had a little bit of a conversation with Harrison Taggart about it, but I want to talk to you about it as well, because RJ Maryland coming in, it was one of the nation's top tight end receiving threats, and I'm sure you had a lot of focus on him. What was your responsibility tonight, and just your thoughts on what you guys were able to do against RJ?
Honestly, I knew I was going to have to guard him sooner or later, because we was playing a lot of man tonight, and we knew watching film and stuff like that he was going to be a good player. So I feel like we prepared pretty well with him, especially having a high safety over covering him too as well. So I feel like we did a pretty good job with that. So.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about Jay Hill getting kind of back into the swing of things and back to calling the defense, although he's in the press box, which has been new for him the last couple of weeks. Just the strength that he provides you and how well you played for your coordinator tonight.
So I played 2 years with him. This is going to be my second year. And definitely these next couple games were for him. I know he had a scary incident and stuff like that, and we just – He brings a lot of fire to this team, especially our defense. We love Coach Hill, and our defense really would do anything for him, and I'm glad that he's doing okay, and I know the rest of these games are going to be for him. So
coming into this game, coming out of the Southern Illinois game and having 120 yards rushing from that quarterback, coming into this game with rushing quarterbacks and knowing what they could do, how much did you guys game plan and orient your defense to make sure these quarterbacks couldn't hurt you with their feet?
Honestly, we had a lot of spies tonight, and we coming into this game, we knew that he was going to be a pretty good quarterback, especially on his feet. He's pretty athletic and super fast, so we just had to keep our gaps and contain and stuff like that. So,
Isaiah, this team is now 2-0, and getting to 2-0 by – you were double-digit underdogs, and you were playing in a stadium where they'd won 9 in a row and putting up a ton of points to not just win, but to keep a team like this out of the end zone. What kind of effort did it take to get that done tonight?
Honestly, I have faith in our defense. I knew what our defense was capable of, and coming out here, I knew that we were gonna struggle a little bit just because we wasn't super used to the tempo of the offense. But as soon as we got that down, I feel like our defense is we're for sure one of the best in the Big 12.
What's Justin Enna like as a coach?
He's hard, but he's a super good coach. I feel like he's hard on us when he needs to be hard on us, stuff like that. So especially when say we make a mistake, he lets us know what we did wrong and stuff like that. I've learned a whole lot, especially me coming as a free safety, getting into this defense and stuff like that. So he's helped me a lot.
You guys win another game, and BYU's got a good history of this, winning games on a short week. You didn't practice Sunday because you can't, obviously. That's true. And then you have basically a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of work, travel Thursday, play Friday. How much work got done in those 3 days, and how focused would you say the prep was to play and win on a short week like this?
We were pretty banged up, I would say, especially Monday and Tuesday were some hard days. We knew coming into Texas with the humidity and the heat, it was going to be a rough one. So I feel like our preparation was super good, and especially having to adjust to that fast tempo, I feel like we worked on that a lot in practice this week. So,
Isaiah, how much are the iPads and the headsets changing the calls and changing the effectiveness for you guys to be able to recognize things and get calls?
Honestly, I'm super grateful for it, especially when you know you made a mistake or, like, you didn't really read, like, maybe a run or something like that. You can come to the sideline, you can look at the play and stuff like that and correct exactly what you did wrong. So having the iPads, it's super helpful.
So you're able to look at every play or any play that had an issue, you're able to review that on the sideline?
Yeah, so when we come back to the sideline, it kind of takes a second, but it shows the whole last drive, and it's super helpful.
Hey, Isaiah, do you know where you guys are next?
Wyoming, Laramie.
So. Off to Laramie. What do you think about that?
Honestly, I have a lot of family out there, so I'm super excited to go play out there. I know their crowds, they be getting after and stuff like that, so I'm really excited to get in that type of an environment and especially see my family. So,
well, good luck. Where's all the family at? You mentioned they're up there. Where are they at?
Like Laramie and Rock Springs. So,
okay, well then this will be a special game for you.
Yes, sir.
Going to be bumming some tickets off freshmen.
That's for sure.
Good for you, Isaiah.
Isaiah, thanks for your time. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's Isaiah Glasker. We'll come back to Dallas. BYU defeats SMU by a score of 18-15. This is Hyundai Cougar Post Game Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
BYU Sports Network.
I think we were past the top of the hour by a little bit. We need to pause 10 seconds for station identification on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
This is BYU Radio on KBYU-FM HD2 Provo. You're listening to BYU Football on BYU Radio.
And SMU's 9-game home win streak comes to an end. They're kept out of the end zone. It was a record night with 5 field goals, but that's all they had as BYU wins it by a score of 18-15 and improves to 2-0. And hence, the Cougs did come in as double-digit underdogs in this game. Now, yes, the over-under, the number was much higher than 33. It ended up being a lower-scoring game, but a win is a win. And these kinds of wins have value, right? Yeah, the offense is going to go back and say, man, we could have done this, changed this, figured this out. Be careful with this. 3 turnovers, probably too many. But you're 2-0.
This is I tweeted this out. This is a statement win. And people are going to be like, wait a second. Well, your offense wasn't great. It wasn't flashy. It was this, that, and the other. Hold on. This SMU team really could win 8 games. This SMU team is probably going to get 5, maybe 6 ACC wins. And look, there's a lot of bad teams in that conference. You know, they play Cal, they play Stanford. They should get wins over both of those teams. They've got Duke. They should get some based wins in there. But I think that this SMU team's going to do some good things by the end of the season. They're going to be a 7 or 8 win team. The fact that you came into a stadium where nobody gets a win, where it's been very difficult to get a win. You come into a stadium where, as Greg had mentioned, nearly 54 points a game offensively, and you hold them to 15 points, and you don't even let them in the end zone. It's a statement win in that we saw their defense show up. We now know that they've got some active defense. They can get the pressures. They can do those things. And so I do think it's a statement win for this BYU football team.
BYU's now 2-0 hands for the 5th consecutive year as well. Fans, remember, when the Cougars win, as they did tonight, you win with Papa John's Pizza. Use the online promo code BYU50 on the app or at papajohns.com tomorrow, just tomorrow, and receive 50% off pizza. This offer is good at any Utah location, but tomorrow only. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from SMU's head coach, Rhett Lashley. Cougs defeat the Mustangs 18-15 on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
Let's rejoin Greg Wrubell and Hans Olsen for more Cougar Postgame Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
BYU 18, SMU 15, our final score. The Cougs were shut out in the second quarter, scored in the other three. SMU was shut out in the first quarter, scored in the other three. Neither team got double-digit points in any quarter. BYU ends up with 336 yards to SMU's 261. And it is true, the Mustangs had played just the two games this season, winning in Reno and then defeating Houston Christian in their FCS game last week. But SMU was averaging 501.5 yards per game and was held to just over half of that. The head coach of the Mustangs is Rhett Lashley, and our engineer Doug Olson was on hand for these postgame comments from the SMU locker room and Coach Lashley a few moments ago.
Good, hard-fought defensive battle. Really disappointed to come out on the wrong side of it. We had plenty of opportunities and thought our kids played extremely hard. Even though we didn't play well on offense, our guys on offense played really hard, and our guys on defense played really well and got the turnovers we needed, and our kicker was excellent. But, you know, from a statistical or just a looking at a standpoint, can't be 2 of 5 in the red zone and 3 of 16 on third down and win very often. We had our chances, and proud of our kids, played their guts out. I just didn't do a good enough job of pushing us through and winning the game, and that's my job. So, questions.
Where do you go on the offensive line just after tonight? Just a lot of pressures, and obviously Ja'Kai went down at one point.
Yeah. The Ja'Kai going down was critical because we got the ball on the three and about went under center. Probably still should have. I mean, J.O.'s done it plenty, but called a different play. Still should have been fine, and we get a hold, which was critical. But he was able to come back. Ja'Kai was. I think we had early in the game, you could tell we were struggling. We gave up some sacks early. We just were doing some things. It wasn't as much physical as it was maybe mental, some mental bust. I thought Garen did a good job getting the right five in there to settle it down. So, you know, we got time to evaluate. I still think our top eight guys are who they are. And but, you know, we settled down and played better, but the first quarter was really rough. We were going backwards.
Kevin versus Preston, but was tonight just one where the game kind of dictated it?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously the question is fair and right. We went into the game with the plan of predominantly playing Preston. Told Kevin there was we planned to put him in the third series. It wasn't a guarantee. You know, if we would have gone down and scored the first two drives, we weren't going to do that. But we weren't going to go back and forth. It's not fair to either one of them. First two drives were really poor offensively. And, you know, so we went to Kevin, which was, again, part of the original plan. And then, you know, he gave us a spark. We went down. I think that's the drive we had 4th and 1 and didn't convert. But we moved it, had our best drive yet. So we made the decision to give him another drive. But then we went down and got a field goal and got points. And so at that point, you're kind of, you know, I don't think the first two drives were all on Preston by any means. But we were moving the football. We still put Preston back in there, and again, we had a protection bust up front. It wasn't Preston's fault. We take a sack, we go backwards, we're 3 and out. And so you got to look at it at that point and go, look, it's not personal. It's not on a person. It's when Kevin was in there, the offense was at least moving the football down the field, and we were getting either points or opportunities to get points. And so as a staff, we just all made the decision to go with that the way the game was going. And we did play. We moved the ball, but we didn't score any points. So that's kind of how it unfolded.
Anything about how BYU was defending when Preston was in versus when Kevin was in?
They defended them both the same. Now, what they did that was different is they didn't run their base defense. You know, they're a 4-down front team. They played predominantly odd stack a lot the whole game, did a lot of odd pressures. So, you know, the first couple drives, we were a little unsettled because it just wasn't what we prepared for. Our guys settled down. Our coaching staff did a good job. I just didn't do a good enough job adjusting. So that's why we moved the ball. We didn't finish drives, and we didn't move it great, but we moved it. We just didn't finish any drives, and give them a lot of credit for having a good plan, and it worked.
What did you think of Kevin's play overall?
You know, overall, he made plays. He was confident throwing it. You know, I'll have to look at the film and see. Like I said, I think the first four drives we were in, we went down and either got points or got to 4th and 1 inside the 10. So it was just the feel that we were moving the ball the best in that moment. And, you know, we still made plenty of mistakes. And, you know, even on the last play of the game, I think we had RJ, and we just didn't get to him. So some of that is just experience, some of it's playing, but I was proud of how he battled. He made a lot of really big plays for us, especially when things weren't going well.
Did BYU do anything unique or different to try to nullify RJ?
Well, they did a lot to nullify our weapons on the outside. Again, they played more of an odd stack, a little bit of bear front, but those are just not their two predominant fronts. They did that some on third down, but they were playing a lot of a couple, three or four different variations of zone, very loose zone, so we couldn't, you know, run vertical down the field. Makes sense. And so we adjusted and we were able to start hitting guys over the middle of the field. And run the ball, but even then, when you spit a run, there's plenty of people there. So it's the same story we've seen before, and people don't let you be explosive. You got to grind out drives, and credit them. They were going to bend but not break, not give us big plays. They pressured more than they have, but that's fine. That's normal for people to decide to do that. And I think you saw we moved the ball, but we would always get stuck once we'd get inside the 20, and or sometimes not even that far, and have to settle for field goals. So yeah, credit them. It's a great game plan. And they executed it, and we didn't adjust and execute well enough, and that's on me.
If you were to describe this game with one word, what would it be and why?
Frustrating. Yeah, frustrating. We had our chances. You know, look, it's hard to win. I mean, we knew it was going to be a game like every game we play this year, for us to win is going to be similar to this. You know, maybe it's 18-15, maybe it's 38-35. It doesn't matter. Like, it's going to be tight. It's going to be close. You're not going to roll people. That's not what happens most weeks. When both teams show up and play hard and play physical, it's frustrating because, you know, we had our chances with some good field position off of turnovers. We didn't score touchdowns. You know, even the 4th-and-1 play early in the game, I thought we had a chance for a touchdown there. We didn't get it. It's frustrating because, you know, we get the pick down to the 3 and then we have a hold. And, you know, we didn't have undisciplined penalties tonight, but we had some critical holds on either the return game or on offense. You know, I guess it's 5-7 in the penalties, but. That really, really hurt us. You know, it's hard when you're going backwards. It's frustrating because our guys play hard and they play physical. I mean, there's no question that we were just as physical as them and we played just as hard as them. And, you know, credit Kalani with that great call on 4th-and-1 late in the game. To go for it there is gutsy, and they executed a great play and got it, and they won the game. To what the
defense is doing.
Our defense.
Yeah, what your defense is doing and what they kind of came up with the big plays.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, that's – I think that's our defense. You know, I think they're going to battle. I think they're going to get after people and cause turnovers. I thought they played really well. You know, we didn't score enough points. So, I may not be answering your question very well because I don't totally understand the identity part about the defense. That's the identity we think our defense will have. So I'm proud of that. And tonight we didn't score enough points on offense. And the guy calling the plays is sitting right here, and he didn't get it done.
How much of a sense did you get on the red zone mistakes? Was it guys pressing? Obviously, the 2 turnovers. You mentioned the holding call, or was it just a product of just going against a stout defense?
You know, I got to see. I need to look at it. Right now, it's a blur on the back end trying to recount every drive. I mean, obviously the one that's obvious, we get the ball on the 3 and we go backwards and then we fumble the next play. That's pretty self-inflicted. You know, so should I put them in different situations, give them different calls? Maybe that was it. Maybe we didn't execute on a few of them. You know, we were typically when the field shrinks, you need to be able to run it in. We were able to run it forward, but not far enough and get in. And so, yeah, it's a great question. I need to watch the film to give you a better answer. I'm sorry.
The bye week here, is there anything that kind of jumps out to you that you guys as team, players, coaches have to, you know, really hone in on a couple of key points?
Well, look, I mean, we obviously haven't played well enough to win this game tonight. So, yeah, there's a lot we're going to evaluate. What we're not going to evaluate is our kids' effort. We're not going to evaluate their togetherness, because I think it was there tonight, and I expect them to respond that way. But we're going to evaluate, yeah, everything, like we do any time we lose a game. You know, we're going to see what we can do better with this team on all 3 phases, and we're going to try to get prepared to go win a game here in 2 weeks. So It's disappointing. Guys, it's disappointing to lose. It's disappointing to lose when you feel like your guys gave everything they had and the game was right there in the balance and we could have made a play and won and they could have made a play and win and they did. So it's disappointing. Yeah, we're going to look at the film. We're going to do what we can to improve it. But it's just hard for me to give you the exact reason. There's not one thing I can put my finger on other than the clear obviousness that we got inside the 30-yard line and didn't score touchdowns. And it's really that simple.
What do you think of Colin's performance tonight?
I mean, it was great. I mean, he hit 5 field goals, 2 over 50, I believe, especially in the first half, which was kind of into the wind the way it was in pregame. And then the last one, you know, when it was clutch, you know, we had to have it to tie the game and give ourselves a chance, and he made it. So, really proud of him tonight.
He set 2 records tonight, one for field goals in a game, and the other tied his big career record. I guess how important is he to this program?
You know, I thought he really started kicking the ball well the second half of last year, and even in the conference championship game, which, you know, led him to be an all-conference kicker. And I think his only miss of the year is over 50 right now. And so he's kicked the ball really well the first 3 games. And, you know, even when you are moving the ball and scoring touchdowns and things that we need to do better, you're going to have clutch kicks you need in games to win. And it was good for him to get that confidence tonight. And, yeah, I mean, he's so far proven to be a pretty consistent guy for us.
When he got here as a freshman, you talked about him as a guy with a load of talent but some inconsistency. Is he now the player you thought you were recruiting, or has he maybe even exceeded your expectations in any way?
I mean, he was tonight. I mean, he was 5 for 5. He was great tonight. And so he's always had a big leg. And, you know, so hopefully this tonight gives him a lot of confidence that through the next, 9-plus games, he'll continue to be pretty consistent for us.
Yes, for you, with this bye week, and you'll have a couple more, obviously, would you rather have the bye week and kind of regroup a little bit? Or would you rather have another game next week to just get right out back out?
Yeah, I'd rather have another game next week. You know, it's not very fun getting your tail kicked. It's not very fun when you feel like as a competitor, you know, everyone, whether you're a football player, a basketball player, a golfer, you have not your best night. I didn't have a very good night tonight. And I hate it for our kids because they fought their tail off. And so, yeah, I would love to get back there quickly, but look, the reason football is the best game in the world, and anyone else can argue, and that's fine, everybody gets their own opinion, is because it teaches you life. And sometimes you give everything you got and you lose. Sometimes it's because you could have done something better. Sometimes it's because BYU played a great game too, and it was a grinder. It was there back and forth, and give them a lot of credit. But, yeah, I'd love to play again, but I don't get to for 14, 15 days, and so we got a lot to work on.
Anything else?
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Coach Rhett Lashley, head coach of the SMU Mustangs. His team falls to BYU 18-15 tonight. The first time that SMU's been held without a touchdown in nearly 8 calendar years. It was 2016. They lost home to TCU 33-3. They'd scored at least 1 touchdown in every game since until tonight. BYU wins it by 3. 18-15 is your final score. Greg Grubel and Hans Olsen upstairs. Mitchell Juergens down on the field. He'll be joined by Kalani Sitake shortly. We'll put the headset on Kalani and get his postgame comments after BYU improves to 2-0 for the 5th consecutive season. And they try to go to 3-0 for the 3rd time under Kalani next week when BYU takes on the University of Wyoming in Laramie. Hans, you heard Rhett Lashley there. Your thoughts?
Well, I thought he was very complimentary of the way his guys played, and I will give his defense credit. They did play very hard and very physical, and they made plays that probably gave them the right positions to get the win. Their defense made some great plays. For instance, that interception by, was it Hunt? I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was Jared Harrison Hunt.
A lineman, right? When Jake threw up the middle?
And yeah. Got it somewhere around the 20. It was definitely gave them a red zone possession. Their defense put them in position to score for sure. At the very minimum, a field goal, probably a touchdown. But BYU's defense steps up and they force the turnover. What, 2 or 3 plays later? They force that crazy fumble that at first it was called down, knee down, and then they reviewed it. And it was one of the craziest fumbles you'll see. He was vertical to the ground. His shirt was touching the ground, but his belly, chest, knee were not. Mm. And they overturned it and gave that ball back to BYU. But
massive play, wasn't it?
Yeah, but SMU, their defense did play lights out. And BYU learned a lot from this. And also Coach Lashley talked about some of the things that BYU was doing offensively. They learned a lot in this. And, you know, they had a couple of jumbled plays on fourth down, that crazy play when, you know, you were talking about it, where it was third and short, and then it was fourth and short, and then they tried to draw the defense off with some of the cadence and hard snap counts, and they didn't get drawn off, and then you went under center, and then you tried to get back out from behind center into shotgun, and then the running back couldn't get lined up, and then you took the snap, and you didn't get the first. And there were so many moments that you learn from with this offense. Greg, it was not clean. It was not clean. But this is a very solid win. I can't express to people how solid a win. Just coming to Dallas, into football country, coming into this stadium, facing being down. You know, you're down and you're having to come back at times in this game. And you were able to put the things together that you needed to put together. There was a really nice drive by Retzlaff that was clutch that they absolutely needed. So a lot of good, way more good coming out of Dallas than there is bad. Of course, when you got the win, that's the big good that you carry high on the shoulder. But there are a bunch of things that you get to clean up before you head to Laramie.
Didn't give you most of the main team stats. We'll hit a couple of those before we break and get ready to hear from Kalani Sitake. BYU outgains SMU tonight, 336 yards to 261. Again, barely over half of their two-game total before tonight, SMU, that is. There was an FCS game in there. BYU played FCS last week. BYU outpassed SMU 202 to 144 and outrushed SMU 134 to 117. The yards per carry number for BYU was only 3.8, but SMU was only 3.3. BYU penalized 5 times 45 yards, SMU 7 times 69 yards. Both teams struggled on conversion downs, BYU 2 of 13 and SMU 3 of 16. On fourth downs, BYU 2 for 3, 2 for 4, but the final fourth down conversion for BYU was kind of a game winner. The Miles Davis play down the sideline, we'll talk more about that with Kalani, but this is a guy that he had maybe 1-2 touches to that point, and he ends up taking an option pitch 37 yards. In fact, he'd had 2 touches for 0 yards before that play, and that becomes kind of the play of the game. Total plays, SMU snapped 8 more than BYU, 72 to 64. Average yards per play, 3.6 for the Mustangs to BYU's 5.3. Red zone, BYU perfect, 3 for 3. And SMU, which had been 9 for 9 in the red zone, held to 2 for 5. On this night, turnovers were even. Possession time to BYU plus 2 at 31 minutes to 29. Those are some of the main team numbers of note. Jake Retzlaff, 15 for 28 for 202 and a score. Pass efficiency of 111.7. Kevin Jennings, 15 for 32 for 140, so under 50%. No touchdowns and a pick. Pass efficiency rating of 77.4. Miles Davis ends up, thanks to that 37-yard run, as the leading ground gainer for BYU tonight, 3 for 37. Leading receiver, Darius Lassiter, 2 for 62. Matava Tassi had 2 for 42 and a score. Also with 2 catches, Roberts, Marion, and Davis. SMU led by Brashard Smith, 14 for 75, an average of 5.4. And leading receivers for the Mustangs were Keyshawn Smith, 4 for 46, and Brashard Smith at 4 for 21. 18 to 15 is your final score. BYU defeats SMU by 3. As we noted earlier, BYU's never won a game in 100 seasons of football before tonight by a final score of 18 to 15. So we call it the BYU Scoregami, and that gets BYU to 2-0 on this night.
Man, I forgot about the Tassi touchdown. It feels like it was so long ago, but how beautiful was that play? It was kind of a redesign of what we saw in that touchdown against Southern Illinois.
We'll take a break, back with Kalani Sitake in 60 seconds on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
Oh,
Postgame coverage of BYU football continues with the Cougar Postgame Coaches Show, brought to you by BYU Creamery, serving sweet memories for 75 years. The Cougar Postgame Coaches Show is also brought to you by Ryan Valuation, formerly Econ Partners, a national leader in business valuation. Learn more at ryanvaluation.com. Let's rejoin the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell.
This is the BYU Creamery Cougar Postgame Coaches Show, coming your way from Big D, Dallas, Texas, Gerald J. Ford Stadium. BYU 18, SMU 15. For the fifth consecutive year, BYU is 2-0. It's another short week win for Kalani and the Cougs. And Kalani Sitake, BYU head coach, joins us now from field level. Kalani, congratulations to you and the guys. Hard-fought win. Really good offense kept out of the end zone tonight. Your thoughts on an 18-15 grinder?
Yeah, glad we got the win, let's say that. But the boys just kept believing, man, and that was the key here. They didn't give up, and they didn't question. They didn't point fingers. They just kept playing the game. And we knew, I mean, not our best game, but I think you have to give a lot of credit to SMU for what they did, and they kind of disrupted us in the timing and the rhythm of the offense. And then, I'm glad our defense was able to respond and get some turnovers. And it was just kind of a back and forth, but the key was us holding them to field goals and them not getting in the end zone. This is an explosive offense, and so keeping them out of the end zone was a key. The red zone defense was huge.
Well, another key was going for it on fourth down in a very critical situation, Kalani, where you'd had a couple of fourth down failures earlier in the game, and you go for it. Just take me into making that decision. You know, where you're at in that game, and they got a kicker that can make a field goal from their side of the field, and it's just the whole thing considered. Take us into that decision that you had to make.
Well, I just felt good about it, and just wanted to be aggressive, but at the same time, like, have it be about us. You know, we can control our destiny. And I know it was a short field the other way. Their field goal kicker has a wind and all that stuff, but when it came down to it, we took a timeout and just evaluated a little bit more, and I just felt 100% let's go for it, and I felt good. I liked the look in the eyes of our guys, and they wanted it, and so it ended up being a big play for us, and fortunately we were able to get the win and kick the field goal. I mean, that was a good game. Not our best, obviously. We can be better. We can be better, but I thought we made some really good statement with our defense, you know, so this is something that we can build on, but we definitely need to get better for next week, and that's just a natural progression that I want for this team in all three phases.
The play coach just described came on a 4th-and-1 on BYU's side of the field in a 15-15 ball game with 4 minutes to play. Miles Davis takes a short option toss from Jake Retzloff and down the field for 37 yards. It was only his third touch of the night. Other running backs had played. L.J. Martin got hurt. You saw Enoch. You saw even Sione Moa come in. Hinkley played. Miles Davis got the ball on the biggest play of the night, Coach.
Yeah, and it just, I love it. I mean, the guy's played so many plays for us, and he's has so many, just so much experience already that it felt good. We felt good about our entire running back crew, just the core of guys that we have there. Like I said, Enoch Nawahine was able to step up and make a play. I mean, that was a fourth down conversion, I believe. Was that fourth down? We went for it on that run with Enoch, and mm-hmm. You know, so it just felt good. I mean, I think a lot of people probably wouldn't go to their third or fourth running back in those situations, but we felt good about it. We feel good about this depth. We've developed it to this point, and it just sucks that we had to use them tonight, but we know we can, and hopefully we get LJ and Hinkley all ready to go for next week, but if not, we know we got more guys that can do it and are capable of getting the job done.
What's the early word on LJ Martin right now, Coach?
Well, I think it's not. It's still day to day, so we have to kind of see how it feels tomorrow.
What's it, an ankle? What is it? An ankle?
Yeah, it's a lower leg, and so okay. We have to just kind of see what it is, and it depends. That stuff. It all depends on what we evaluate, and then also there's so much adrenaline that's hard to even get a great evaluation when you're trying to mess around with it. We just knew that he couldn't go to the rest of the way tonight, and then Hinkley was a little banged up too, so we'll have to get those guys evaluated, and you know, we still have guys that are capable of doing it if we need them.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Caleb Etienne and his performance through game one and then through game two. I know that he had a monumental task with taking on Elijah Roberts and Jafar Harvey and Isaiah Smith. I mean, these are some real Russian ends. And I felt like he held up well. I felt like Braden Keim held up well in both these games to start the season.
Yeah, they did great. And I think some of the issues were, like last week, Keim actually got picked by his own, by the running back, you know. Yeah. So it's kind of like, hey, I don't need your help. You know what I mean, type of thing. And so, awesome. But the guys are playing at a high level, the O-line is, and we're playing against some really good, solid defenses, and it's going to be tough sledding. But if teams are going to do that, we need to find ways to convert plays and get chunk yardage and get some points on the board. Obviously, 18 points is not enough. That's not what we want to do. We'll take it for tonight, but in the future, we need to do more and get more production from that. And A-Rod and the whole staff, they know that. The offense, I asked them just not to hang their heads because they obviously know they can play better, but we'll keep working. We're going to need them next week. This is an entire team win. That's how we work through it. We needed the offense to win. We needed the special teams to kick field goal in, and, I mean, it all goes together. It's complimentary football.
This is the BYU Creamery Cougar Post Game Coaches Show, brought to you by the BYU Creamery, serving sweet memories for 75 years. Closing comments and a final segment with Coach Kalani Sitake coming up after this on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
You're listening to the Cougar Post Game Coaches Show on the new skin, BYU Sports Network. Now, back to Hans Olsen and the voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell.
Well, tonight's game essentially ended on a 4th-and-10 for SMU, a stop by BYU on their Mustangs' final possession of the game. Cougars win it by a score of 18-15, another close win over the Mustangs. 4 of the 5 wins over SMU decided by a field goal or less. Let's get to the Ryan Valuation Valuable Stat of the Game with Kalani on the headset, by the way. BYU's accounting program is nationally ranked, so it's no surprise. One of the nation's top business valuation firms is run by diehard BYU fans. Need a valuation for your business? Go to ryanvaluation.com. And our Valuable Stat of the Game tonight, Kalani, is SMU going 5-for-20 on conversion downs, 3-for-16 on third, and 2-for-4 on fourth. So a 5-for-20 when they need to move the sticks. And the game ended with you guys stopping a 4th-and-10.
Yeah, great. Those are great stats. And the defensive guys they look more comfortable in the scheme now than they ever did last year. And I mean, it just takes some time sometimes. And nobody wants to hear that in this college football world. But the guys did well, but we're still not close. I mean, we still want to get more done. So we've got some things to fix, but it's just good that you can play this way and get some stops when you need it and get some turnovers when you need it. I was just really proud of the way they took the field even after we threw that interception. You know, they took the field with a different type of mindset. It was nice. That's leadership right there and belief.
So many positive things and so many things to be excited about. I did want to talk a little bit about Jake Retzlaff and his performance tonight. 2 interceptions. That one was crazy, Kalani. D lineman falls to all fours. He gets up, and as he's getting up, the ball kind of just hits him in the hands on that interception down in the red zone, where then your guys force a fumble and get the ball back, which was just incredible. And then he had a fumble in the first half of this game. Just talk about Jake Retzlaff. He had some really good moments that you know he can build off, but some learning moments that you know he can learn from.
Yeah, and obviously just really uncharacteristic moves, some mistakes. I mean, the fumble in the first half was just, I mean, there's no way that should have happened. I think he mistimed the snap for the fly sweep, I believe, and then just kind of turned around, tried to run it, and if that happens, you got to have two hands on the ball, and can't just give them up. I mean, that's what we do. The ball belongs to the program, the fans, and the players and the team, not the one individual. So, obviously, we want him to do better. I want him to redeem himself, and I thought he did a good job of getting back on it. But we have a belief in him. We know he can make plays for us, and it just things weren't in sync with the offense. We got to get that rhythm down, and you know, we had some drops and we had some bad times, and just. We've got to get better, but we will get there. But when we needed it, they made it, they converted, and we got the final score, and we'll take that, man. But we'll build on this, but we know it's nowhere near what we're used to and what we want.
Jay Hill was back with the team this week, was back on the flight to Dallas, was up in the box tonight calling his defense, and maybe just a thought from you about your friend and your colleague, the week of work that he was able to put in and the response he got from his guys and the new way of seeing the game and how it's all coming together for him after a really scary week last week.
Yeah, I'm just glad that he's doing well. And, man, you guys know him, and he's just a hard worker. Need him to relax a little bit. And I think him in the box and us on the field, it's a good dynamic. I like it. And if we keep getting wins and getting stops like this, and you know, why mess it up? But I think it's good for him to get that perspective. Just need him to keep, you know, he keeps pushing it. So his wife, Sarah, put me in charge of making sure that he doesn't get in trouble. So I'm trying to slow him down. But then I made him sing the fight song. But, I mean, come on. He can do that part. We just need him to relax a little bit. But I'm so fortunate that he's doing well with his health. But really happy with what this defensive staff and what Jay Hill's been able to do.
Yeah, people don't understand. They just don't get it, man. They don't understand what kind of guy he is.
Yeah.
I wish everybody could get to know Jay and just how casually hilarious he is, how he loves to rib people, how he loves to have fun. He loves to smile big. He loves to laugh. He laughs off things. He's just one of the more genuine, heartfelt, kind-hearted yet hard-working men that you'll come across. And I just want everybody to know who he is.
Yeah, well, he's going to be around for a long time, so let's keep him that way, and then keep him just, I mean, it's been good. I think we'll see what with the box, and I think that's kind of what we're due for a little bit until we get to the we feel good about him being on the sideline. But I mean, it's been good so far. It's hard to complain about the stats and what we've seen, the production.
Well, Kalani, the last time I was in Laramie, Chris Hoke and I were fighting to get off the field for Chris Watkins to come in and substitute for us because it was so cold. It was so nasty. I didn't want to be there anymore. That's the last time I was in Laramie. I have not made a return trip since. But here I am. I'm going to do anything for you, brother. I mean, when I signed up for this radio gig, I knew that Wyoming was on the schedule at some point, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna do it for Kalani. But here we go back to Laramie. Give me some of your thoughts headed back into Wyoming.
Hence, Laramie in September is beautiful. So we just never really had that before. So now we're going to go there. And I have a lot of respect for that program. You know, Coach Bowles done a great job setting it up there. And it seems like they've carried on the tradition, carried on what he's done. So tough program, tough kids, and a tough overall fan base. They're going to be passionate. I think it'll be a good experience for us. We need that experience to get on the road and go to that atmosphere, that environment. It's going to be fun, man. I'm excited for our guys. And more than anything, there's things that we need to improve on. We need to be better for this next game. And we're excited to get to work. But, you know, we're not afraid to go up there and play that game. And what helps is that it's in September. Beautiful, you know. So I think in the times we've played, it's always been November. So this is going to be, yeah. Be a cool experience. It'll be a lot of fun, just like it was here. And, you know, within the nice humidity, now we're going to be up there in some thin air, but it's going to be nice and fresh in the mountains. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, you'll look to go 3-0 next week for the second consecutive season. As it stands, you're 2-0 for the fifth consecutive season. Kalani, congratulations to you and the guys once again on a really a nice, nice win. And every win counts the same no matter how it comes. And it's kind of sometimes even sweeter to win it on a night when the defense has got to make play after play for you. I know you appreciated that part of it tonight.
Yeah, it was fun. We'll take it how we can get it. And sometimes you just have to have these type of games. The best teams have to do it. And I'm glad we were able to get the win overall as a team. But I'm looking forward to the next one. And just thank you to all the fans that came. Yep. I know a lot of people drove a long ways to be here. We really appreciate them, and then they were loud and wearing the Royal. It was amazing. So looking forward to the fans up in the Wyoming area to show up there, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Just thank you, Cougar Nation. Appreciate your support. We love you guys. Thank you so much.
Proud of you and your staff, Kalani. Thanks for taking time with us after these games, man. I know your time is precious, and we really do appreciate all the time you give us.
You guys are the best, man. Thank you for representing us the right way.
Thanks, Go Kalani. Cougs. Safe travels.
Thanks, guys.
See you next week. That's Kalani Sitake. And that is the BYU Creamery Cougar Postgame Coaches Show, which brings us to tonight's BYU Creamery Inside Scoop Trivia Question, presented by the BYU Creamery, serving sweet memories for 75 years. I'm going to give you a question. And if you're out there in Cougar Nation, all you have to do is use the hashtag BYUCPL and connect your answer to that hashtag and send in your response via X, a.k.a. Twitter. Again, use the hashtag BYUCPL. CPL stands for what, Hans?
That would be Cougar Post Game Live.
Got it. Hashtag BYUCPL.
I'm so glad I knew that, man.
There was like, I looked to his face, and I was like, this doesn't seem like that hard a question, but there was a moment there.
Yeah, I was like, is he hitting me with a trick question? Because you play tricks.
I don't.
No,
I do not. I do not. I play it straight up.
Okay, no, hold on. I was sitting in a lobby, minding my own business.
Okay, okay.
Waiting for my good friend, Greg Rebell, to come pick me up.
Earlier this morning. Yeah, I wasn't picking you up. I was certainly meeting you in the lobby. We're in the same hotel, oddly, this time. I was simply coming to meet you so we could go out to the car.
I feel something kind of brush my head. And I thought, oh, I must be a plant. And I'm like, please don't do that again. And then I feel something brush my head. And this time I kind of jumped because it was a little bit more pressure.
You almost swung on me.
And I did nearly swing on you thinking it was a plant at the very least. And it was you with a big smile.
Yeah.
And I was like,
just tickle in the back of the head of my buddy.
My guy's got jokes.
Yeah. Okay. But yes, hashtag BYUCPL. And here's, we should get to the question, I guess. Here's your question. Okay, BYU Creamery Inside Scoop Trivia. Outside the state of Utah, Wyoming is the opponent BYU's faced the most times all time. Because BYU's met Utah 95 times and Utah State 91 times. And Wyoming, 79 times. So outside teams in Utah, Wyoming has faced BYU the most. After those three schools, which team has BYU faced the most all time? Just give us the answer with the hashtag BYUCPL, and you could win 2 half gallons of famous Creamery ice cream. We will start that portion of our post-game show. It's Hyundai, Cougar Post-Game Live, and it continues after this on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
This is Cougar Postgame Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network. Cougar Postgame Live is brought to you by Hyundai. There's joy in every journey. Cougar Postgame Live is also brought to you by Big O Tires. Stop by your locally owned and operated Big O Tires, the team you trust. Here's the voice of the Cougars, Greg Rebell.
Cougar, you know what? Let's do this. Before I tell you any more about where we are and what we're doing, let's pause 10 seconds for station identification on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
This is BYU Radio on KBYU FM HD2 Provo. You're listening to BYU Football on BYU Radio.
All right, so welcome back. It is Cougar Post Game Live, this segment brought to you by Big O Tires. Making it Big O Tires, Cougar Post Game Live. And I will tell you that you can go to BigOTires.com and make an appointment at one of 50 locally owned and operated Utah locations. Big O Tires, the team you trust. Greg Rebell and Hans Olsen and Mitchell Juergens now, the crew back up in the broadcast booth. It is Big O Tires, Cougar Post Game Live. We gave you before the break a BYU Creamery Inside Scoop trivia question. The question was this. Outside the state of Utah, Wyoming. Why are we talking about Wyoming, Hans?
Well, because we're going to be in Laramie.
Next week's opponent, Wyoming.
Coming up Saturday night.
Outside opponents in the state of Utah, Wyoming is the opponent BYU's faced the most times all time. BYU's met Utah 95 times, Utah State 91 times, and Wyoming 79 times. So after those three schools, which has BYU faced the most? That was our question. We told you to send in the answer with the hashtag BYUCPL.
Can I give you my guess?
Yeah, go ahead. You can. You said did you or can you?
Can I?
Sure.
I'm going to go New Mexico.
And that's the next one. That's the next one down the list.
Okay, so that's number four.
That's number five.
That's number five.
I would guess, number four. But I saw the answer.
So Mitch is pulling himself out of this one.
Colorado State?
Yes. So I knew the answers come flooding in, right? The first one is wrong, and the next one's right. And so many more came. But the first one in, and normally Ryan Lundgren gets at least 2 half gallons a year by being in first. Ryan's really good at this, but he did not win tonight because just before Ryan Lundgren, passing my timeline on hashtag BYUCPL, Zach Lucarini, hope I pronounce it correctly, Zach, said Colorado State, and that's accurate. 69 times BYU's played Colorado State with a record of 39-27-3. BYU's faced New Mexico 60 times. But Colorado State is the correct answer, and Zach is a winner. And many, 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 many more answers came in. A lot of San Diego State, a lot of San Diego State people, some Air Force, some UNLV. You like New Mexico. There were a couple New Mexicos. Since UNLV was brought up by a few people, got me thinking, and UNLV, just 19 times. Yeah. UTEP, now if you'd gone UTEP, well, now you're talking. That's 37 times. You're okay. Getting up there. But Colorado State, way to go. All right, good stuff. Woo, 18-15. BYU's a winner over SMU tonight.
And it feels good, really. Feels good leaving Dallas with a win. Guys, this I feel okay. Like I'm having a flashback because I feel like we're leaving Arkansas 2023 2-0. Big win over a Power 5 conference team. And all these hopes and expectations now steeped with a 2-0 start.
And that was 3-0.
Well, yeah.
That was their third. They were. And,
oh, that's right. Coming out of the Arkansas.
Yeah, because they beat Sam Houston, Southern Utah, and then went to Arkansas with a real barometer game, right?
That was
the games you're going to handle. Then the barometer game they won to go to 3-0. 38-31 was that win. Different tone of a game. But 38-31, you're flying high to get to 3-0. This night gets you to 2-0. But if you play your cards right and beat Wyoming, you will be 3-0 again, setting up and don't want to look too far ahead, but it's okay to say that if you take care of business, that K-State game in late September and at Lavelle Edwards Stadium could be absolutely massive, although it's only the first Big 12 game of the year. It could have a lot to say about who ends up in the top tier, if not contending for this league.
Well, I really want to make a point of this because I do think BYU got punked in their conference schedule. They got to play
this year in 2024.
Yep, they got to play all five of the ranked conference opponents, but they get four of them at home in the comfort of Lavelle Edwards Stadium. And the one that they don't is at Rice-Eccles Stadium against the University of Utah. So you're not having to leave the state for any one of the ranked opponents, which gives me a lot of hope that you're able to find a win in some of those ranked opponents.
Yeah, let's just hope for some late kicks under the lights.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then BYU goes nocturnal and it starts to just dominate.
Oh, man, those late kicks.
Speaking of nocturnal, I think this is interesting. Of BYU's 13 Friday night games in the Kalani Sitake era, Friday night regular season games. Of BYU's 13 Friday night games in the Sitake era, they've all been regular season. 11 have been short week games, meaning a game on Saturday, home or away, followed by a Friday game. Of those 13 games, 11 were short week. Of those 11 games, BYU's now 9-2. 9-2 under Kalani in the short week games, meaning game Saturday, game next Friday. But of those 11, 5 were away, meaning the second game was away.
Yeah.
Meaning you're traveling on top of everything. 5-0. They've not lost a short week away game in the Kalani Sitake era. 5-0.
That is kind of bonkers.
Kind of impressive, too.
Yeah. And you called it out, too. It's an interesting wrinkle at BYU because Sunday's off. So it's really a mega short week.
You're getting 3 days. And Monday.
And you travel.
And if you play Saturday, you already know. You guys played the Monday after a Saturday. No one's feeling too good.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. You're.
So you get really kind of 2 days where you feel like you can play football a little bit just to get everything in. And then you travel Thursday, you're playing Friday.
Well, now they get just a little bit of extended time to get ready for Laramie. Did you play in Laramie, Mitch?
No.
Oh, man. You're so blessed. Because that place is absolutely, it's a tough place to go play.
Played
as bad as the September, though.
I played Wyoming one time, but that was in the Poinsettia Bowl, Josh Allen.
Oh, yeah.
It was wet, rainy, so it was a sloppy game.
Josh was good.
You know what the people in Laramie, they call it Laradice.
Do they?
As in, welcome to paradise, welcome to Laradice. They love the place they live, and I respect and shout out anyone who has civic pride for their place. They love Laramie,
speak
a.k.a. Laradice.
Speak it into existence. You know what I mean?
By the way, Greg and Hans and Mitch up in the booth. And joining us, along with audio engineers Scott Sandstrom and Doug Olson, it's Dr. Kurt. Dr. Kurt has made his way into the booth. Yep. Who do we have with us here, Mitch?
This is my dad.
He's a proud father.
Yeah, made the trip from Houston here in Dallas. And He's actually flying back with me to Utah tomorrow. So it's fun to have your dad around.
Well, does this make him, well, makes him 1-0 on the season. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's bring him to more.
Hashtag BYUCPL. You can use that. Besides winning ice cream with that, you can just submit a comment or a question and be part of our post-game discussion. Hashtag BYUCPL for Cougar Postgame Live. And we will use those comments to spark some discussion topics as we break down BYU's 18-15 win over SMU. Crazy game in that we saw 6 takeaways in this game, 3 for each team, and 1 near takeaway that was actually followed by a turnover. So it canceled it out a little bit. But BYU made a great strip, a.k.a. a near punch of the Tyler Allgeier sort, as Mitch brought up on the air. Breshard Smith, I believe it was him on the run. The ball bounced off the turf back into his hands, and then a few plays later it was Mark Collins making the pick that ended the drive. But it was wild in that there were huge swings with 6 takeaways on the night. But notably, of BYU's 3 giveaways, only 3 points were scored by SMU. Conversely, SMU gave it away 3 times and gave up no points off those turnovers.
So but that's really impressive.
Yeah. Really.
It was just a defensive back and forth. But, you know, couple of big moments that played a huge role. When BYU gave it to SMU inside the red zone, SMU starts to drive, and that fumble that is reviewed and overturned and given back to BYU. Mitch, you were right there on the sideline. I mean, you were right there close to that play. Was it recognizable from the get-go? At what point did the BYU sideline start to realize, wait a second, this is going to be overturned?
Which one are you talking about?
Down in the red zone. Remember the fumble that they originally called down by contact, and then they reviewed it, and his knee was just barely off the
parallel to the ground.
It was vertical.
So where I was, I did not see it live.
Okay.
And the one downside to this stadium is they didn't show any replays on the screen the whole game.
No kidding.
Basically. No, so every close play, I was hoping to get some visuals. Never got any visuals for any of the replays. So that one, I was in the dark. I wasn't sure. Just listening to you guys kind of interpret it, and but that was incredible that one flipped.
Yeah, yeah, and what a big moment. Yeah.
Hashtag BYUCPL. Jarrett Webster on the X Machine tonight says Blake. Period. Mangelson. Period. That's it. That's the tweet.
Yeah.
The Mangler tonight was a postgame award winner by you, was he not?
Yes, he was. He was given the Steel Man.
Steel Man of the Game tonight.
And
Palmer's Metal Mart, Steel Man of the Game.
Kalani and I were talking about him in the break. And
you brought up, is it okay to bring up the guy you brought up to Kalani?
Oh, yeah.
For a comp? Who's the guy you mentioned?
Yeah, so Kalani and I were talking. Kalani and I played with a guy named Brett Kiesel. And Brett Kiesel later became the Beard with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And completely changed his identity. But going way back into BYU days, he was actually Brett Kiesel. And he was backwoods, country, long, extended arm Brett Kiesel. And I asked Kalani, I said, man, Kalani, he reminds me of Kies. And he said, absolutely. He's like, that's a perfect comparison. He goes, he's country strong like Kiesel was country strong. He'll do anything that you ask him to do. He goes, he's a next level guy. Just like Kiesel was a next level guy. Now, Kiesel built himself into, I would argue, borderline Hall of Famer. You know, by the time things are all said and done, I think he had 3 Super Bowls and was a huge reason they were able to get to all 3 of those. So he's got some real special talent. And I think that's the perfect tweet. Blake, period, Mangelson, period. Because every time you needed the pressure, Mitch, both you and Greg, did you guys ever see the quarterbacks settle their feet and have a comfortable pocket all night?
No. And even if it was, they weren't comfortable because of the pressure they faced early on. And even if the pocket was pretty, which it never was,
because
the defense got after them, they were quick to feel uncomfortable and you could see it.
Well, I think it's the reason they took Preston Stone out.
Yeah.
I think that they had full intentions to play Preston Stone for 4 quarters. And now, I talked to a couple of SMU personnel that work in the broadcast and have inside information, and they told me, we're expecting Preston Stone for 4 quarters. And it became really apparent really quickly that the pressure and sitting in the pocket was not going to work. And they made the move to Kevin Jennings pretty quick.
I'm not sure they got a first down when Stone was on the field tonight. Not a single one, I don't think.
That's just bonkers.
So it's Greg and Hans and Mitch up in the booth. I mentioned our engineers, Doug and Scott, and Dr. Kurt is here as well. I can't overlook Jake Murphy. I turned around, Jake wasn't here, but he's back now. Jake is our spotter and did a great job tonight. I got to hand it to Hans. He's really unequivocal and headstrong on his replay reviews, and he sticks to his guns. And I might waffle a bit or say I see it this way or that. I'm not sure. And Hans just goes, no, that's the way it is. And Hans is just nailing these video replays.
Well,
the officials are always confirming what Hans has said, and I'm like, I don't know.
There was a few moments, but that what they called originally the contact helmet
targeting.
To helmet that
yeah.
that
on Tanner Wall.
I was going to lose my mind.
And immediately, he's like, there's no way that's targeting. I'm like, I don't know. I can see the head snap back, and yeah, you had it.
Greg had his window open, and the first thing is, I don't know why it comes to my mind. If they call that targeting, I'm going to jump out the window. That's
We would not let that happen.
I'm not going to sit here on the headset and watch officials ruin a game choosing who they get to throw out of a game because of incidental. There was no intent. And yeah, by the letter of the law, it kind of grazed the face mask, and I'm like, no. And then that fumble, I mean, good grief, man. There were some really incredible nights. The thing that I was excited about, I finally saw the packaging for Keanu Hill. And that got me excited because you need a Keanu Hill in that moment. That two-point conversion, guys, it saved BYU's butt. Getting that two-point conversion was so important.
You had just called for him to get involved, and he had two catches within about 2 minutes after that.
Well, and it really comes down to the matchups and the packaging, putting him on the outside. I know that there were some matchups that they were looking for, and they found it, and Keanu came down with it, and that was clutch.
And from my view, I don't know how. I was again, waiting for the replay, didn't see the replay, but off the throw – I thought it was a pick. Oh. I don't know how it got through. I'd have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure the DB's hands were right there, whether they went right through them or around them. Yeah. The DB was right there, and talk about concentration. And that's what, you know, a big time play and a big time moment, a veteran, Keanu Hill, getting it done.
Couple comments coming in using hashtag BYUCPL on Twitter, aka X. Patrick said the offense obviously struggled tonight on many drives. What are the main issues you see on offense, and how can they be fixed? It's easy to point fingers at the quarterback, but what's really the issue here? Your thoughts on that, Hans or Mitch?
Well, I could start, and I will tell you that this SMU defensive line will be one of the top three defensive lines you'll see through the year. I think that it's got three NFL talent on it. I think number 58, number 5, and number 10 are all NFL talent. And so let's go first and foremost, they got talent, and they got guys that can play. So we need to give it to them a little bit. Secondly, it's interesting when you get away from your stars a little bit. You know, we see Darius Lassiter with that one catch where he breaks multiple tackles and works it up the field, and then you just – don't really go back to Darius. Or we know Chase Roberts in the slants. He's unstoppable in the slants. And against Nevada, I saw SMU give up slant protections to Nevada. So I know the route was there and available, and they never really went to Chase in the slant, which is automatic, other than that deep slant, Greg, that came across the middle. So maybe going back to the guys that make you famous and making sure you're getting it to Darius, you're getting it to Chase. And then the other thing I'll mention is when L.J. Martin went down, the whole thing shifted. And I'd like to know from you, Mitch, because you're there on the sideline, and you see L.J. come off, and you saw him come out and kind of walk on it and spat it and then go back in the tent. You've been around a lot of injuries. You've seen a lot of things. How bad did it look to you?
I mean, it looked he was limping the whole time. So when he came out of the tent, he was walking up and down the sideline the entire rest of the half. he was trying to, I mean, you could tell he was trying to get it loose. He did not want to sit out of that game. You could see it in his eyes. You could see the disappointment in just the simple fact of the injury. When he came out of the locker room after halftime, he came out with the trainers. They kept him in the end zone doing his own personal work, and he was running around. He looked pretty emotional when he came back out and couldn't go. They were hopeful that coming back out, that, you know, a retape job, that he'd be in a position to get back on the field. But he couldn't, and it was wearing on him. And that's, I mean, it's devastating for a player like that who was, had so much promise from last year. He's getting more experience now as a sophomore, feeling comfortable, looking great week one. And it is, it's heartbreaking because those injuries, especially an ankle as a running back, like you need your ankles. You need the ability to slam your foot in the ground because that's what LJ does. That's what makes him great. And to not have that luxury, it's heartbreaking. Now, back to the original question. One thing I wanted to comment on.
And by the way, the question came in from Patrick tonight. Thank you, Patrick.
Yes. Regarding the receivers, it's becoming very clear that your top go-to guys are Darius Lassiter and Chase Roberts. After that, though, I need to see players make the big play. Like there were two plays, and you know, we could look at it. Jake could have thrown a better ball. One that was low to Cody Epps, and then the one big ball to Keelan Marion.
Outside.
He turned him around outside. Mm-hmm. If he kept him inside, it would have been a little easier. Yeah. But that's the beauty of playing receiver. You're not going to get a perfect ball, and you've got to be able to make those catches, especially if you want to play on Sundays. Those are the catches you have to make, and those are the catches that are going to show up on your highlight films.
For sure.
To say this guy's legit. This guy's got what it takes, and we saw too many drops. And so from an offensive side today, if they can start to clean that up, because this is a very talented receiving crew, I'm not down on it from this performance. I still think that there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of guys in that room. That even if it weren't Darius or Chase, there's really good, reliable receivers in that room. But you've got to make the difficult and contested catch, because that's what's going to – I mean, that's a quarterback's best friend right there.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you, Hans. Thank you to Patrick for the question. Joe Wilson on social media says, was Gary Bohannon at the game? Yes, he was. He said, I didn't see him on the sideline. We did. Gary was there, warmed up and everything. He's there. And how about Micah Harper? Yeah, Harper was here and playing and on the field. Micah was one of many defensive backs. And maybe one of the storylines of two games into the season is just how many DBs have played for BYU.
A ton of DBs have played, but I tell you what's very telling is in a game like this, who was on the field in the fourth quarter? They had transitioned at safety to Tanner Wall and Crew Wakely wasn't getting a ton of time. In the fourth quarter, he didn't come off the field. They clearly identified him as a guy that was getting it done. He was a sure tackler. He made some great plays. He was flying out or flying around, knew his assignments. And so I'm curious how this is going to affect the kind of the rotations moving forward. Because when it came down to it, when you know the defense was needed the most, they kept the guys on the field that needed to be there, and they stopped rotating, and it was Wall and Wakely. Safety.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy is, guys, I can close my eyes. I pictured Parassus had a really nice tackle on Breshard Smith on the outside. I close my eyes again, and I've got a vision of Raider DeMooney defending a pass in the end zone that was a near PI, but it was not called a PI. It was a hand battle. And he defended, I believe it was a corner route, and stopped a touchdown. So
there's depth.
Yeah, you're going DeMooney, Parassus, Wakely, and then you're starting to get into Wall and Alfrey, and it's deep. Evan Johnson, who can rotate and play at many positions. Harper, that we haven't even talked about Harper. We haven't mentioned his name much this year. So
No, it sometimes takes. I mean, he's coming off a pretty significant injury that kept him out all of last year, and sometimes it just takes a while to get your speed back and get back into the flow, and maybe he's experiencing that. As we go to break, Brad Clayson on the X says, can we talk about Jake's comments about Laramie? And he said, I thought Jack Kelly was awesome with the pressures. Yeah, Jack was great. And by the way, Jake did catch me off guard. He surprised me a little bit with his funny comment about Laramie. We asked him how he feels about going to Wyoming, and he's like, Laramie is a terrible place, and I can't wait to go there.
Get out of there.
Something like that. Hope I'm quoting it more or less. That was more or less accurate.
Yeah, it was a terrible place.
I mean, I thought, you know, the California kid, what does he know about Laramie? And he drops that on us. And again, it's all in good fun, tongue in cheek, but it surprised me. It was kind of funny. I didn't expect it.
It blindsided me. I didn't even have time to react to it. I'm like, because then you look at me and go, did he say that? I'm like, I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. But he did. He took his shots and. I'm sure he's excited.
We look forward to getting up there. Yeah. We're not staying in Laramie. Usually when I've gone up there in the past, I've stayed in town or in Fort Collins. But we'll find a way to get there. We'll find a way to get through a few more comments and close out the show after this. We're coming your way from Dallas, Texas, the Big D, the Metroplex. BYU 18, SMU 15. 5-0 are the Cougs now. SMU's the team BYU's beaten the most all time without ever losing to that team. Now 5-0, 18-15 is your final score. The Cougs now 2-0 on the year. Big O Tires, Cougar Post Game Live. We'll wrap up with a few more of your comments after this on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
Let's rejoin Greg Wrubell and Hans Olsen for more Cougar Post Game Live on the new skin, BYU Sports Network.
Hashtag BYUCPL on the Twitter, a.k.a. X. My friend Jerem Jordan made a comment saying SMU should have called timeout after BYU's third kneel down. BYU ran the play too quick, Jerem said. BYU would have had to punt had SMU called a timeout. Now, maybe by the letter, but yes, technically yes, but SMU already had a timeout, hadn't called it. I think by the sportsmanship component, the two coaches, by not calling timeout, you were conceding that BYU could deal the game out. Had SMU called the timeout earlier, BYU could have still knelt the game out. It just would have been later in the clock. So, yeah, they could have done that, but it would have been against. Well, I mean, if you've not called the timeout, I don't think you would do it there. I think that would be simply a sporting thing.
I think the bigger conversation is SMU using timeouts early in the second half, and we need to talk about that clock management and how important those timeouts are. And you had a timeout in the third quarter, maybe 2 minutes in. And then you had a timeout. I want to say it was the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they used them early in both halves.
Yeah.
But when they don't use it in a kneel down, in a victory formation situation, you're not going to call it at the very end.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's gamesmanship. It's like, okay, we'll do this, you do this. Absolutely.
Had they done it, it would have been weird had they done that. Right? It would have been like, no, we would have just waited longer to, yeah, okay. Interesting point, though. Technically, yes. All right. Brock on X says, I've been a BYU fan my whole life, but I've lived at BYU the last 13 years, and my oldest just started her freshman season at Wyoming. Her loyalty might be messed up, but mine isn't, he says. I'm so excited to see the Cougs go for a 3-0 start in Paradise. We know it's now Laradice next week. Scroll. Let's see. I'm trying to think what might be a good something to talk about before we head out here tonight. Have we not hit anything, Hans, that you really wanted to address here in the postgame?
You know, I think we've hit a lot, but I do want to pay just a little bit of attention to special teams because they can tighten some things up with special teams, and we don't focus on that aspect of the game enough. But some of BYU's field starting positions were – less than subpar, and you got to make better decisions. And if you're going to come out of the end zone, make sure that you're getting that down a distance. And why am I forgetting the missed field goal by Farron
right before halftime? 55 wide left.
That's okay. That's what it was. I saw that he was 1-2, and I'm like, okay, well, what was the situation?
Same situation as last week. They got the ball late with a minute to go and drove in position for a long field goal, hit it against SIU, missed it tonight.
But I felt like SMU was winning the field position battle pretty well.
And they also had a record number of field goals tonight by Colin Rogers, 5-for-5.
Which is absolutely incredible. That was a display of kicking.
This came in from this. I did want to get this to you. John Livingstone on X says, my dad and I made it to the game. What are y'all's thoughts on the offensive line performance, especially Caleb Etienne? He seems to have improved a lot since last season. It was on Coordinator's Corner this week that Aaron Roderick thought that Caleb played his best game as a Cougar last week against Southern Illinois. Hans and Mitch, certainly if you want to weigh in on this, just the O-line play through two games and Caleb in particular.
Well, there were two or three times that I called his name tonight on sealing the edge, and they only gave up one sack. I know that Retzlaff was under pressure a few times, but they only gave up one sack on the night, and I don't think that came from Caleb Etienne. I want to say that came up the middle, if I remember right. That came from Jared Harrison Hunt, and I want to say that was off a kind of a delayed rip over the guard. So Etienne not giving up a sack against two really good pass rush artists and not even really giving up a ton of pressures, sealing the edge a couple times. I've been really pleased with him.
SMU had one sack tonight.
Yeah.
BYU had three.
Yeah, just one sack by that SMU defense that, you know, I was expecting a really good battle. I know we talk more about Etienne than we do Kime, but we don't talk about Kime a lot because Kime has just done his job. And I've been pretty impressed with the bookends for the offensive line for BYU. And they're going to have to be good. I mean, this is a really good defensive line. They're going to see some amazing defensive lines. I think the best defensive line they'll see will probably be University of Utah. It's a really good defensive front. And Etienne and Kime are going to have their work cut out for them. And I'm excited to see those matchups because I'm feeling a lot better about both of those guys' ability on the outside.
McCord Meekum on X says, what do you credit most for the D-line improvement over last year?
Well,
keep it going in the trenches here, Hans.
I've actually got a lot to say on that. Number one, you learned a lot as a defensive line coaching staff last year. And you probably took a lot of heat for 11 sacks and just not getting the pressures that you'd wanted or hoped. So you bring in some help and you bring in some guns. You got Gary Anderson and Chad Kawaha, and you got Sione Pua, and you got Kelly Popinga, and you've got all these minds that are working with these guys. And then you make some moves. You know, you bring Blake Mangelson to the three technique, and he's been special. You move Logan Latui into the starting end position, and I think he's given you a real boost in run defense. Isaiah Banya, according to him, had two torn meniscus that he was playing on last year, and now he looks more healthy and more active, and I just have been impressed. I think that they've really been receptive to the coaching and all the different words of advice, and I also think that they've taken the challenge. Look, you cannot exist in Jay Hill's defense and not be a good defensive end. You can't. His defense doesn't click if you don't have rush ends that can't get one-on-one pressures. You can't do it. So we've seen some early pressures and some early success that gives me a lot of hope.
Great. Breakdown of both sides of the neutral zone there, offensively and defensively.
Well, and by the way, that was the grip of the game in the first half. That both the offensive and defensive lines, they were winning their jobs in the first half, and that was setting the tone. And I know that SMU went on and kicked a couple of field goals and grabbed the lead going into the half, but, man, I felt like they were winning those battles. And then they lost it for a bit in the third, and then they grabbed it in the fourth again and won their battles. So really impressive by both trenches.
Jimmy Trent on X says, SMU seemed to signal early a fair catch, but not necessarily have the receiver give himself up. I didn't see it that way. I think it was a distinction of did he make the catch or when did he make the signal? He made it really early. It doesn't matter really when you make it or where you make it. The only rule that applies is that the purpose of the fair catch provision is to protect the receiver who, by using the fair catch signal, agrees they are a teammate or a teammate will not advance after the catch. Yeah, the non-returner could also signal the fair catch, meaning the other guy has to now catch it and not advance it where he receives it. At Chaplain Schumann on X said, Retzlaff made some mistakes, but what did you see from him that was encouraging? Mitch, you want to run at this one?
he ran the ball confidently. I feel like in the fourth quarter, late in the third, the offense finally started to grab some sense of momentum when they started letting Jake pull the ball and started to pick up some big chunks with his legs. I thought that's big. And this is, again, we go back to Jake coming into and earning the starting role. One of the things that we've always talked about is his dual threat ability. And up until he started running it late in the third and in the fourth, we really didn't see it last week. We didn't see it, and we didn't see it early in the game this week. And I think that's a luxury that you got to take advantage of if that's your quarterback. Because, you know, yeah, if he wasn't completely accurate with his arm. And so if you're going to create some or demand some respect from the defense, you got to mix it up. And one of the ways to do that is a quarterback who can use his legs is going to add a whole nother wrinkle that you got to be mindful of. And I thought Aaron Roderick dialed up some good plays to help kind of give Jake that confidence back and help him be productive as a quarterback with that.
I like the fact that Jake, as the old Timex commercial went, takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Yeah.
Took some hard hits tonight.
Well, yeah, and he had some down moments where he could have got down on himself, and he doesn't get down on himself.
Okay, on that note,
really resilient.
We had him on the coach's show this past week, okay, and we had a feature on him in Deep Blue, and they bring up the pick six, okay, but they spent a lot of time talking about the fact that there was one guy on that play that sprinted the length of the field to make a tackle attempt at the other goal line at the end of that pick six, and it was Jake Retzlaff. And he literally went 100 yards on a sprint to try and tackle the dude that just picked him. And he ends up on his back. And because it's a pick six, the offense has to go right back on the field, right? Yep. And so he gets off his back and gets over to the sideline. And I think it was Fessy who said his lips are blue, he can't breathe. And then he's back on the field seconds later doing what? Leading a touchdown drive.
Yep.
So and they use the word microcosm, and sometimes that gets overused, but what a great way to show in the span of a few minutes just who the guy is. Makes a mistake, tries to make amends for it, and then gets right back on the field and does in a way by leading his team down to score. And it just kind of showed you in that moment just kind of who he was and who he is. And we knew from the get we talked to him after the loss in Morgantown. That was his first start. BYU got smoked. But if you felt like he did all he could in that moment to be the best player he could be starting for the first time at the D1 level, at the FBS level. And the comments and they got, you know, kind of lit up and it was a up and down game by a lot of people, but he puts on the headset post game and is happy to address every question that came his way and showed us just in those few moments we spoke to him in Morgantown. I thought about who you might have under that helmet. And his game tonight, again, showed some decisions he'll want back and can fix and can amend. But, man, I still have no problem saying that's my guy when it comes to your starting quarterback at all.
I just love how he takes a punch and can take a punch and doesn't worry about that punch, doesn't get down on himself. I think that is a big-time characteristic that you hope can carry through the season. Another thing that I like about Jake Retzlaff, you can see that he takes a lot of pride in and gets a lot of joy from the specialty plays. You know, we saw that backfield shift where they shift and direct snap to – who was it that they direct snapped to? That then
to Nawahine.
To Nawahine. And then he flicked it back to Jake.
Who then finds Tase, right?
Who Jake rolls around and finds Matava Tase and has a fantastic wide-open reception. And it was just a pretty – gadget play. We saw it last week, that bomb to JoJo Phillips off the play action look that was down the seam. You know, when he gets those moments, he looks prepared, he looks excited for it, he looks confident in it. And sometimes you've got quarterbacks that get lost in those opportunity moments, but he seems to thrive in them.
So we thank all of those in Cougar Nation who have given us things to talk about here on Cougar Post Game Live. At Chaplain Schumann with a follow-up asks, where's your victory meal tonight?
Ooh.
Now, sometimes you get an earlier game that gives you some more options for your post-game meal. Sometimes an earlier game gets you to an actual restaurant that will take reservations, and you can have a nice sit-down and really enjoy the sumptuous surroundings and take a long, leisurely meal. And Then sometimes you get late games where you don't get out of the stadium till around midnight, like tonight. It's a quarter to midnight here in Dallas. And so we tasked Jake Murphy to find us a good place to go eat tonight.
What is it, Denny's?
With a late departure. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
So we're going to Denny's.
Oh, okay.
We'll be at Denny's in about 20 minutes.
That was the best you could find, Jake?
I mean, Jake's serious about his food, too. Like, Jake's no slouch when it comes to finding good restaurants. And so if Jake says it's Denny's, it's probably because it's the only thing available to
us. Here comes that moons over my head.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, again, I'm an IHOP guy. I'm a Denny's guy, a man of the people. I'm happy to eat wherever.
Yeah, that skillet never hurt anybody.
I've probably ordered more steaks at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning than anybody really should. I'm the kind of guy, like, I don't, you know, even if you are a 24/7 breakfast establishment, I will order a steak from you at midnight. That's just kind of the way I roll. By the way, thanks to Ian Fitzsimmons, an associate of many of ours, who gave us restaurant recommendations for today. We did end up at Mi Cocina for lunch.
Ooh.
And even though I heard Hans slander me about my meal habits,
slander.
We enjoyed. Hans went on the air today on his other show, and I couldn't respond. I had no rebuttal. I just had to listen to him describe the way he thinks I eat.
Hey,
tell
me this. Does Greg comes in with personality, doesn't he? Like, when he's sitting down to eat, he's got personality. And you know, you are going to get some type of reaction from our guy, Greg. And when you're the suggestive one, you sit there like, oh, please, please. And when he fist pumped over the tortilla soup, I had this wave of emotion just fall off my shoulders. I was like,
you did it.
Oh, I did it. It's all okay.
That was really good soup.
And there's a lot of things I love about Greg. But the way he loves food and his opinions on food, it may be one of my favorite attributes of my co-host over here, because nobody gets into it more than Greg. Well, except for maybe me, but we do love our food.
I shouldn't get as excited as I do. But
no,
it's one of the older I get, the later I get in life, it's just one of those pleasures I will not let go of.
It's just the best. And I love your fascination with tortilla soup. And
you do know that I order it everywhere we go because everyone's got a take on it, right? Nobody does tortilla soup the same way. Every Mexican restaurant or Tex-Mex will do tortilla. They have their own way of doing it. And I love that fact that you can get so many different versions in the course of a year.
I sat down with Scotty, my co-host, and we were talking about our run to Giordano's, the pizza place.
Yeah, and what about that? I hear Scotty saying I ordered a salad. I don't recall that.
Yeah, you ordered the Caesar.
Okay, I did do that.
Yes, you did. You ordered the Caesar.
He said I cut it with a fork and a knife.
You got after it. You chopped it up into really good bits. And
I don't recall any
of this. Scotty said to me, he goes, hey, I think Greg was upset with the pizza that you'd ordered. And I go, I don't think so.
No, it's just that I'm not a deep dish guy. But I said to you guys before that I kind of became one that night. I partook. I had a nice big slice.
But I got to tell you.
Weighed about 15 pounds.
I was sitting there after I placed the order because it took 45 minutes and I got there early. I'm like, hey, here's the order. Get the food. I was so hungry. And this is my favorite pizza in the entire world. And
are these mics still on, by the way? Are we still on the air?
I hope so.
Okay.
And so Greg comes in and I'm like, hey, got the pizza, sausage, deep dish, meat lover. This is going to be fantastic. And he sits down and orders a salad. And Scotty leans over. He goes, I don't think he likes the pizza you ordered. And I was like, no. I was worried about it. But then my guy came around.
Greg was.
Thank heaven.
I did come around.
This is why I love being with you guys. It's just, this is a joy. This is a true pleasure. Glad to be along for the ride.
Well, we always love being with Cougar Nation, and breaking it down the way we do is always more enjoyable after the result is favorable. And it was tonight, 18-15, BYU over SMU. The Cougs go to 2-0, taking on the Wyoming Cowboys next week. It'll be a 5 o'clock Mountain Time pregame, 7 o'clock kick. The Cowboys take on Idaho tomorrow. So they have an FCS opponent tomorrow, 1:30 Mountain, I think, on True TV if you want to advance scout the Cowboys. Then it'll be BYU and the Pokes and the renewal of an old Mountain West Conference rivalry next week at War Memorial in Laramie. So until then, that'll do it for us. 31,000 172 tonight's official attendance, 32,000 the capacity. There were a lot of more empty seats than the number we just gave you, but that's the official number tonight, 31,172. As BYU comes in and snaps SMU's 9-game home win streak, it was the fifth longest current streak in the FBS. And BYU, as a double-digit underdog, yes, double-digit underdog, came right in and broke the Cougs' own 5-game away losing streak. It had been almost a calendar year since the game in Fayetteville last September that BYU last won an away game. So nice to get that done as well. And they beat a power conference team. This is an ACC team, right? SMU. So a lot of things to like about tonight. Speaking of Fayetteville, I'm going to find a way to get there tomorrow for BYU women's soccer against Arkansas. We'll see if the Cougs can follow up a nice win against Boise State with a win in Fayetteville. That'll be tomorrow night for Jen Rockwood and her team, and then they start Big 12 play next week. Our thanks to the crew back at BYU Radio, our coordinating producer Terry South, our control board operator Seth Larson, our studio engineer Barry Squires, our studio host Jason Shepard. Here in the booth, our audio engineers Scott Sandstrom and Doug Olson, our spotter Jake Murphy. We had stats interns working the broadcast as well tonight. That would be Tyler Mattingly and Winston Platt. Thanks for them for helping out. Tyler giving us the Scoregami news. It was a BYU Scoregami tonight. The Cougars had never won a game by an 18-15 score in their football history until tonight.
100 years. It took them 100 years.
100 seasons of football to get it. So thanks to the stats interns. Good to have Dr. Kurt up here as well. Kurt Juergens, father of Mitch. And we're going to take Kurt to Denny's apparently right now. So that'll do it for all of us here in Dallas. Our thanks to all of you in Cougar Nation for tuning in, being with us. Our appreciation to all the BYU players and head coach Kalani Sitake for joining us postgame as well. All right, that'll do it. 18-15, BYU over SMU. Back with you from Laramie next Saturday, 5 o'clock Mountain Time pregame, 7 o'clock kick. So, for the man to my far left,
shoeless Hans Olsen.
The man to my near left,
Mitch Juergens.
Shirtless Matt Juergens. Remember? By the way, Mitch, this didn't make it on the air. Mitch, people may know, we've talked about it. Mitch is training for the St. George Marathon in 4 weeks from tomorrow.
Going to win it.
And he's tapering after today. Today was his long run that he'll now taper down from before the marathon. Mitch didn't just run 23 miles today, which he did. He did it on a treadmill.
Yeah.
Okay, treadmill running is brutally hard. It's boring. It's not fun. But he did 23 on a treadmill this morning for his long run before the taper. So kudos to Mitch. It's unbelievable.
Of the 23, how many was the shirt on and how many was the shirt off?
Shirt was on. It was in the hotel. So.
Is that Spring Hill Suites protocol, or are you just going by?
I don't know whose protocol, but I was.
Well, Mitch will begin his taper after a grueling run. He got up early today and knocked it out on the treadmill, no less. All right. For Mitch and Hans, my name is Greg Wrubell saying, in the meantime and in between time, this has been BYU football on the new skin, BYU Sports Network. Good night and so long from Dallas, Texas.